Making history is part of the journey for Zhou Guanyu. He's the first Chinese driver to race in Formula One and the first to score points. Now he's ready for another first.
I think I'll have a lot of goosebumps going into the weekend with all the Chinese fans being there to see their first ever driver coming from their home to be racing the home crowd.
But while breaking new ground this season, Zhou also needs to secure his future in Formula One.
You try to not think about over the season, but on stage, you are also, you know, aware of the situation, knowing exactly you need to perform, you need to show what they can do. The main object is to continue staying Formula One in this paddock.
Welcome to F1 Beyond the Grid. Interviews with F1's biggest stars on your podcast app and the F1 YouTube channel every week. I'm Tom Clarkson. It's great to have you with us. The Chinese Grand Prix is back for the first time in 5 years. It's always a sensational race weekend, and I can't wait to return to Shanghai. But the person who's looking forward to it most has to be Zhou Guanyu. For the first time, he'll be racing at the very track where he first fell in love with Formula One as a fan, in the city he left before he'd hit his teens to chase his Formula One dream. Since he was last on the podcast 2 years ago, he's become a match for his more experienced teammate Valtteri Bottas, and he's walked away from one of the most dramatic crashes in recent years. We talk about that and about his future, which is uncertain. Like many other drivers on the grid, Zhou doesn't know where he'll be racing in 2025 or whether he'll be in F1 at all. Surely he will. His performances and personality have won him fans in the F1 paddock, around the world, and of course, in China. Before he races in front of his home fans for the first time, seemed the perfect time to catch up with Zhou. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Zhou, lovely to see you again. It's been 2 years since you were last on the show.
Yeah, actually, I remember last time we did that in Montreal, I think, if it was right. But yeah, it's, things been changed over the 2 years.
Quite a lot has
changed.
Many
things changed.
Can I just clear something up in terms of what has changed or hasn't changed? Can you take your hat off and reveal whether there is a mullet or not?
No, there's not a mullet yet, and it will never be one.
I thought I saw the team post. Oh, hang on.
That was a fake that was first mullet that I put it on for my special helmet for Valtteri. So yeah, because I obviously Australia Grand Prix, I want to do Australia Aussie things, and then I was like, okay, I took that picture last year, 2023, in the engineer office of Valtteri with his mullet. That's where when he first introduced this very aggressive hairstyle. So I was like, okay, I put that picture originally took by myself on the helmet. Then here we go.
Have you been tempted to follow him?
No, not really. Not in that kind of areas, of course.
What about the skimpy swimming trunks? No, not that.
No, I can't do these either. Like, yeah, I'm sure many of you see a lot of my own, I don't know, like sponsor adverts or that. Yeah, I'm not naked like what Valtteri did.
I suppose there might even be a new helmet design though for you in China next week, yeah. Home race.
Yeah, exactly. Have a new one, special, very special one coming up for already being working on it since December, actually. So it's been obviously my idea, the creative side of things. And of course, probably people expect dragon, but there won't be a dragon on the helmet, unfortunately, because I like to be quite, like say, having my own taste of designing stuff. And I expect to be having a lot of driver having dragon gold in their helmet, which that's why I went for complete different direction.
Oh, can't wait to see it. No, so, Valtteri this time though.
No. There will be everything about Shanghai, about China, about my, let's say, a little bit of my throwback with this Grand Prix circuit.
Well, let's talk about your first home race, the Chinese Grand Prix. How excited are you?
Yes, so excited to be going back there. Already, of course, started quite a lot of preparation with partner events and things, let's say Melbourne. I've been back, actually the new calendar works quite well for me just to be able to be going back quite often over the last few, well, 1 or 2 weeks. And yeah, we'll be getting busier, already started busy scheduled, but I think actually when the weekend starts, as much as I would hope to be a very normal weekend for me in terms of just feeling, you know, not too pressured up, but I think it will be a very special one at the same time. And I think I'll have a lot of goosebumps going into the weekend with all the Chinese fans being there to see their first ever driver coming from their home to be racing the home crowds. As much as I, you know, dream to be racing at the Shanghai circuit, I think also for them to see me, that's going to be a very unique, special moment.
Well, what are you looking forward to most?
At the moment, I'm looking forward to the most is my first outlap on the track, because obviously I never raced in the Shanghai circuit. The Grand Prix weekend, I did drove on it in 2019 when there was the last race. I did the demonstration in the V8, very old Lotus car. But that lap for me was already feel very special. But then when I have my first outing lap as an official driver, that's going to be an amazing moment. That's what I've been, let's aim or dream to be since 2004 when the first race was hosted there. So yeah, I think that's going to be the specialest moment at the time.
Can we throw it back to 2019? Because you also did a demonstration in the center of Shanghai.
And yeah,
I mean, that was mental.
Before my Bahrain debut, that day was probably my most nervous, memorable day. Yeah, obviously, demonstration in the Shanghai, we're not talking about near the circuit, the location, which you have a big, wider road. You're right in the center in Xintiandi, is where exactly in the city. And firstly, I couldn't believe it was happening. And then that was actually before that, I never drove any Formula One cars, only probably did 1 or 2 days in this F1 sim, that's about it. And going there with this VA engine, yeah, that was very nervous and also quite a stress, let's say, before I actually, you know, put the helmet on. And once I start my first proper donuts, and I was living the dream by the time, but before then, that was quite a tension going on. And especially for me to looking back to it, I think that was a very special moment. Was able to, you know, do several things at the Grand Prix weekend, and especially to the special 1000 Grand Prix for F1. So yeah, had a good time there. But by then, I think nobody know who I was, only probably the people followed racing closely for my junior career ladder Federer series knows me. But yeah, is a big change compared to now.
Well, if that was true, there was an enormous crowd to come and see you then.
Yeah, already there was a very crowded, and I mean, it was very packed for the city center. And then even after that, on Sunday, before the driver's parade, I was able to do two laps or one lap, I think, demonstration. And when I put the helmet off, standing just before the starting grid, the whole grandstand, the main straight crowd was cheering on me. So I didn't expect that, because by then nobody knew who I was, to be honest.
And you've got your own grandstand this year, haven't you?
Yeah, I do.
I remember you saying actually before the start of the season, it sold out in...
In realistic number is 14 minutes, but in actual number is 4 minutes. So
How many
because
tickets?
Because the first 10 minutes, the app got crashed due to too many visitors. So yeah, actually it was 4 minutes. Yeah, I was not expecting that, but also in the same way, like, grateful for what's happening, and especially having my first grandstand, you know, after 2 years. And then yeah, it's at the main straight, so it's opposite our, let's say, Sauber garage, which, you know, is going to be very special for them to be able to see more closely to what's going on in the garage and stuff like that.
Tell us a little bit more about the Chinese fans.
Yeah, I think compared to when we last time there, it's been a life change in terms of the motorsports culture back home. Because I remember my debut in Bahrain, we reached, let's say, at the time, the new highest viewership in TV or broadcaster online. So that was a huge boost for people understanding you have a countryman racing Formula One. And then a lot of people start following my journey until now. And then also a lot of, let's say, young generations, they start go-karts, and back in China also going abroad, you know, to be taking this specially precise journey I was able to take, you know, from go-kart F4, F3, hopefully they can gradually, you know, gain into Formula One world. So I think not just in terms of the fan, even the celebrities, you know, famous people back home, they love, or they're starting cars, they're starting, you know, just to be having fun, racing themselves, do some testing at different tracks, different cars. For me, too, great to see that. Great to see the country, let's say, growing and boosting. and because of me. So that's just a feel very honored and proud moment. And now, of course, with so much high technology, people understand so well the Formula One world.
Tell us a little bit more about the motorsport culture at home now, because you had to leave to go to England at the age of 12. Is there the infrastructure in China now for the next you to be able to race at home and make his way, her way up the ladder?
You know, realistically, I think you still need to take the same way I did. And the only difference is like, it's so clear now which role you have to take in federations, you know, going from go-kart and then you go, now it's probably the Formula Regional or whatever championship. By then was F4 and then you go F3, F2. But by then, for me, it was harder just because there were so many different category series. So I have to always pick the most, let's say, professional one, the hardest level to be able to compete with the best young drivers. But to be honest, I would say because we don't have like a manufacturing, like engine supply, for example, what they have in Japan, Honda, you know, they have this Honda Dream Project, which you have a lot of young drivers they pick and then, you know, put them all the way to F2 and Super Formula and F1. So for us, we still lack a little bit of that, but it's definitely things like that I definitely hope I can do when I stop racing, finish my own career, try to help as a young generation to be easier to reach or get closer to their dream. But at the time right now, I think they still need to go abroad, race at the most competitive championship. And that's how you can get an eye from Formula One junior program or teams that maybe can help you for your journey afterwards.
This is an advertisement from BetterHelp. If you're a regular listener or watcher of the show, you'll know that I chat to a lot of guests, not only about what they do in Formula One, but also their passions outside of it, to find out how they like to relax and make space for themselves in their busy schedules. Taking the time to recharge and look after yourself is one of the best ways to ensure you're in the best position to tackle whatever life throws at you, and look after those around you too. After all, you can't pour from an empty cup. It's so easy for us to spread ourselves too thin, trying to keep up with work commitments, family time, and our social lives on top. And if you don't manage to get the right balance, you might find your social battery has gone completely flat. If that sounds familiar, you might be interested to know that therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Because therapy isn't just for people dealing with major trauma or crises. It's about discovering what makes you happy and making those things a priority. It provides a safe space to explore your values, set boundaries, and learn positive coping skills. Therapy empowers you to be the best version of yourself, spend more time focusing on the things you love, and unlock the possibilities of a more fulfilling life. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/grid. That's betterhelp.com/grid. Let's talk a little bit more about the Grand Prix weekend itself now. Can you give us an idea of what your schedule is going to look like? Is it 7 in the morning till 11 at night every night? Or are you going to try and shut out a lot of that noise and keep it as normal as possible?
Actually, it would be something like that. But we made a very nice, let's say, adjustment together with the team and also with my own partners. Of course, thankfully for this new schedule, as much as how European people might have to travel back, I was able to just, from Melbourne, I was already in Shanghai before coming to Japan. And after Japan, I'm going straight back there for more. So I'm trying to put everything over the gap between these few races. So when I have start actual Grand Prix, I don't have like a full schedule. I have at least 1.5 days like off. But yeah, already after Melbourne, I've been back Monday. So from Tuesday onwards, I had 5 days conservative, waking up at 7 a.m., finishing around 7 p.m.
Doing what kind of stuff?
Activities, filming, just, you know, for different brands. It's 8 hours a day minimum. So it's things like that. And then after Suzuka, we're going back there for more. But that time is a bit more enjoyable because you get meet some fans. You know, you do more activities than just purely, you know, film for different, let's say, merch.
Now, look, you mentioned film, and it's a beautiful segue into what I wanted to talk to you about next, which is your documentary. Now, I think a lot of people listening to this, watching this, might not be aware that you've been busy filming. It's called The First One, and the premiere is the week of the Grand Prix. Tell us a little bit more about the documentary.
We had this footage since I was very young. So the people who did the filming group, and they was been following me from I was like 10, 12 years old.
So this is karting back in Shanghai?
Yeah, I was in Sheffield. So there's Chinese TV broadcaster, TV people been following me back then already. So they have a lot of footage from when I was young. And then, yeah, this documentary, they was recording over the first year and a half. And then before this year, I was like, we were talking about it. Why don't we make a documentary? But the coolest thing about the documentary is that now people from mainland China can be watching on the cinema, because originally it was maybe planned only for Shanghai or only for maybe online platform, because things like Netflix, we need VPN to get there. So not everyone can, you know, watch that. Not everyone can understand fluent English. You need translation. So this is more for let people understand this journey from what I did from a kid to reach this level. And also for the newcomers, I think for them is as a huge interest and motivation to be able to watch that film and understand about more what I'm doing in my world. And then I think to be hosted or to be out at the Grand Prix week is the perfect date for that.
And so it's a form of inspiration for the next generation. Is that one of the reasons why you've done it?
Yeah, exactly. It's inspiration for the young generation. It's let's say a filming with a lot of insight of Formula One and a lot of what I do. Of course, daily life as well, but main focus is about what I do in this paddock, which a lot of people maybe only see you on TV, you have the TV broadcaster, but they don't know what's going on behind. You know, there's a lot of things going up, and also growing up as a kid, what I was able to reach and what was my dream all the way back in Shanghai and then Sheffield and then going to Maranello, of course, and then back to UK.
It's been a crazy journey, so, isn't it?
Yeah, so many places I've been to. Yeah. And of course, not all of them are difficult to broadcast that, but all of these are in, you know, details, individual things that people can be taking a massive interest and influence from that, because it's more like how just telling people, you know, if you have a dream, you can try to do everything to reach that. Doesn't matter what it takes.
Have you enjoyed the filmmaking process?
I obviously doesn't really input a lot this, let's say, the process of the film, mainly just, you know, have the mic on. It's more about catching what I'm doing daily. This film is not like something where I'm making up stuff or story. It's all real recorded. I think that's where this is all about, you know. I don't want to be fake things up. I want to be just taking people into this real world and to let them understanding exactly what it looks like to be an F1 driver.
What do you think will surprise people the most when they see what your daily life is like?
In general, like, people understand, like, F1 driver, they are still normal humans, but they have to be training extra hard, you know, for their own success, because with how many people in general are fighting for seats, you know, and especially as a rookie for me coming to this paddock, every year you have an individual contract, and how much attention and how much you have to sacrifice as well is that trying to focus on your job. That's where things become difficult.
I feel the documentary just highlights how far you've come in 3 years now.
Yeah.
In Formula One. And the whole fame thing. Let's take this year as an example. You've already been on the front covers of Elle Men, Wall Street Journal, GQ Sports. It seems you're getting an awful lot of traction now off track. Does it feel a bit surreal?
Yeah. I mean, at the very beginning, you're feeling, okay, the first time, you know, a magazine or some famous, I don't know, newspaper, people, journalists, interview, you feel really, you know, crazy about, am I actually in the magazine cover? And now, like, you're getting so many daily requests from all this big brand, which you have to pick from what works out the best with, you know, the situation you're in and what you want the whole readers to see. So, yeah, I feel different. Surreal. And also in another way, I think it feels good, even though there's actual work to be, you know, going on for this things filming, you know, going on during my break, because most of them are done over summer or winter break when I'm back home. But in another way, I think it's a great way for me to promote myself and for people to understanding, you know, they have a F1 driver, because I think Formula One is growing a lot. But 5 years ago or even 6 years ago back home, nobody exactly know what, you know, a real F1 driver looks like. And even the sport itself back in the day, it was difficult for people to understanding that without having their own home drivers, let's say.
So we got all these front covers. You know, like when we go to Mexico, Checo Perez is on every billboard, isn't he? When we get to Shanghai next week, is there just going to be Joe everywhere we look?
Yeah, it will be a lot. There will be a lot. I can't promise everywhere because Shanghai is the biggest city.
Sure, but, that is true.
There will be at the airport, underground, bus station, all the bridge, you know, there will be a sign. And also, even in the building, you know, if you've been to the Bund, normally there's a building with like a graphics, like I love Shanghai, but then that will be a picture of the Grand Prix post. So there'll be a lot going on. Yeah, I can't wait. It will be quite strange seeing myself everywhere. But yeah, I think after that weekend will be quite chaotic.
Do you enjoy the photo shoots? Because you're doing a lot of them now.
If I'm honest, I prefer less, because the problem, like, I don't mind doing photo shoot, but because with the busy schedule you have already at least as a driver, that you're traveling so much stuff. Like I mentioned, all these are done, or most of them, back home, where normal as a driver going on vacations, and then I have to be, you know, stay there for a whole day, around more than 8 hours for doing all this extra work. Of course, that's something probably sometimes get a little bit too much for you, but at the other time, I think if you are this level of, let's say, motorsports, you have to, you know, do things like that to make yourself better and also to make people aware what's going on.
If I was to say to you, tell me about your interests away from the racetrack, is fashion one of them now?
Yeah, it's always been one of them.
Always been there.
Yeah, since...
well, the trainers, right? You've got... Have you still got hundreds of pairs?
So I have a lot of pairs, but some of them I can't wear with different partnerships going on, but I do like to collect them, and a lot of pairs that I haven't been worn them, and I will never wear them because they look like art piece. But in the same time, I love designing stuff. I love, let's say, wear clothes that's designed or have a very high influence by yourself. Let's say the helmet, you know, most of them I draw on a plain helmet graphic, sent to the helmet designer, and he put everything together. So I feel like I'm taking a big part of that, because that's where my interests are.
And do you put a lot of effort into what you wear to a racetrack on the Thursday?
Probably a lot less than what people expect, because I think it's already inside my kind of DNA. So I just feel like, okay, I'm going to wear that daily, and then, yeah, I'll just put that on the track. Because things I pick, I don't have, let's say, a clothes set who pick the clothes for me or give me a few outfits to pick from. Everything is done individual by myself. And yeah, I feel like what I want to wear at the track is what I would wear a daily life. And then for the fans, you know, if they're happy or they want to have something similar, they can actually, you know, go buy it and wear themselves similar way. I don't want something that maybe it's just for the fashion week, because then it's not the real me, what I'm doing. And I feel like just to be yourself, express yourself, and that's perfect way to do it in Formula One platform.
I love the arty side of you, designing your own helmets and things. Is that something that you learned at school? Were you an art student, or is it something you just learned yourself?
I picked art. It was straight away, you know, art PE was my first two pick. And then the rest, I kind of added them together, what's better for me. So art was always something I loved since a kid.
I did also want to ask you about other stuff you're doing away from the track. And the Special Olympics, in particular, last year in Berlin, you went there. Just tell us about that experience and what you took from it.
That was a very, let's say, a different experience, because I've been, you know, following up quite closely with the Special Olympics, and wanted to be, you know, ambassador for them in terms of just to share them with my own experience, because I feel like a lot of athletes in Special Olympics, they still have their own dreams that they want to achieve, but with, you know, certain disabilities that, you know, they're not able to achieve some of the stuff they wanted to be, but they're still there trying to compete against their own level. And I want to share my own experience, also my own, let's say, the way all the hard times it built up from me as a kid having no, let's say somebody to chase for, or ex Formula One driver I can look up to, and everything is figured out by myself and my family and the team. So we try to share together, and also taking them to Formula One race weekend. And we took 6 athletes on Silverstone last year, and they almost cried. And that for me, it's a really warm heart moment for me to use my ambassador role just to give them, you know, a tour what it looks like, and having a best day of their life. And I think it's good. And continue will support this Special Olympics series, and hopefully that I can, you know, give the kids this energy they needed for their own life.
It's an incredible story. I remember you bringing them to Silverstone.
Yeah.
Lots of happy faces.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I knew there were so many people was a massive Formula One fan. So I think, they definitely enjoy that. And I think it's great for me just to share a bit of the inside, my story to them together as well. Give them this extra energy they needed for whatever they're doing for their future lives.
Your story is so inspiring. When we go back to the documentary, does it have English subtitles?
Yeah, it does.
So we can watch it.
So.
No, but just, I think, you know, so many people could learn from your experiences. As you say, it's actually phenomenal what you and your family went through, moving to the other side of the world, having no history of racing in your family, negotiating all the potholes. Do you ever stop and reflect about that?
It's difficult for me to reflect right now, but like, I did reflect like that day when I signed the contract, or when I had a phone call from my manager Graham, and together with Mark, that you could have a race seat in 2022 season. And then, you know, a kid like me, like I've been through a lot of stuff, and I always start crying. Like, I think I never cried before that 4 or 5 years, you know. For me, it was just something that I dreamed of. And I feel like even when I was in F2, at the time, halfway through the season, I was leading the championship, but I still felt like the percentage I get to Formula One was less than 5%, because that year was kind of a tough year. There was only one seat at the time. Alfa Romeo was available, and there was started, I think, was almost 10 drivers fighting, and the list going down and down. Of course, I was still always in the list, but yeah, I didn't really could believe that you know, I would have this opportunity, at least for that year, to be going straight from F2 into F1.
Now, can we talk about Silverstone 2022? Because that's happened since you were last on the show.
Yep.
It was obviously your horrendous crash at the start. How do you reflect on that, everything that went on in those first 10 seconds of the race?
That was scary. That was probably the most scared I've been driving a race car, and everything was happening so quick. The worst thing about the whole situation was that before that I was in such a great form that I had like Q3 points, very good times after, you know, the trouble with the reliability before that. So finally things is coming to me, and then with a very unexpected incident before turn one, and then yeah, the crash was everything was happening so quickly. But, you know, when I was upside down with that speed, still very grateful to be walking off with only a few small injuries and, no broken bones. I don't know how it happened, but it just shows how safety really improved over the years. And, of course, Halo, it was the main factor saved my life at that day in Silverstone.
Have you discussed it with mum and dad?
Not the inside feeling, though, because I don't want them to be feeling, you know, let's say nervous about it. And of course, I just told them that I was okay. But the worst thing about that, it was like the first race when my whole family was watching. So my dad, my mom, my sister, for the whole race, first race of the year, they was all together, because of course, I always lived in UK, and Silverstone is kind of my second home race. For them to be there, I think it was not a nice moment. Can you imagine how nervous or how they felt at the time before the track gave them the green?
Did what happened that day change your approach in any way?
I mean, it only changed my approach for the following race, because I remember being back-to-back-to-back races coming up. I had no time to be, of course, firstly reflect on that, but all I wanted to do in Austria was try to make safe lap one, try to complete lap one, and I was free because I want to get that over my head. So yeah, I think definitely changed a little bit, but I think it's more the form, you know, the whole car was destroyed. We have to introduce a new chassis, everything was new, and there was obviously a little bit adapting, adjusting needed, so I wasn't able to have continued the form I was able to left off before the starting of that Sunday Grand Prix. So that was a little bit, of course, not the best way of that, but beside from that, I don't feel there was only mental issues, everything was fine. So
well, and let's take a positive, is that, you know, the roll hoops are now stronger as a direct result of what we saw happen that day.
Yeah, exactly. I think you know, things always changing after a big incident like that, but I'm happy firstly how FIA introduced Halo. I think it not just saved my life that day, it saved many people's life. Even I think Grosjean or this other F2, you know, there was a lot of cars landing on top of each other. I think that's, let's say, the biggest improvement in safety. And then of course with the roll hoop, FIA decided to be making this adjustment very soon in 1 year time, so I think things are improving.
This episode is brought to you by Bitdefender, the official cybersecurity partner of Ferrari. In cybersecurity and Formula One, every millisecond counts. Only the most advanced cars and dedicated teamwork win races on the track, and only the most advanced security technology and elite specialists have the power to prevent, defend, and stop cyber attacks. Technology makes all the difference in who has a clear advantage, where Bitdefender is renowned for driving leading-edge innovation in cybersecurity. Bitdefender helps safeguard the data of Ferrari. They supercharge the cybersecurity team's ability to swiftly identify and respond to any threat that arises. Bitdefender has earned the trust of Ferrari for its commitment to innovation and for being at the forefront of cybersecurity to manage continuous and evolving challenges. So join the millions of consumers and businesses that trust Bitdefender to protect their digital worlds. Visit bitdefender.com to learn more about why Ferrari chose Bitdefender to stay ahead of cyber threats and how you can make your digital life safer. Let's talk about performance now. How would you sum up your opening two seasons in Formula One? 3 points finishes in year one, 3 points finishes in year two. How do you feel things have gone from your point of view inside the cockpit?
Of course, there was highs and lows, but a lot of moments are very frustrating from my side. I think year one, if there was no issues on the reliability, that would be still probably my highest points scoring of the championship over the 2 years. Last year, I probably will be, you know, even more frustrated. But yeah, first year, I think the car was super great. Of course, shame about the reliability. I had three in a row DNFs. Two of them was in the points. And then last year, I feel like for me as a driver, doing a step, but still it wasn't enough, let's say, in terms of inverted that into results on the standings, just because I think as a team, we improved bigger than what we did. And then we was able to only fighting for P9, P10. So when we score points, it's almost like, you know, you need a perfect weekend to score in points. And then the gap is definitely getting bigger. Like, I think everyone expected the top teams, they're opening the gap, and then the midfield battle is tight, but there's too much, or let's say, as a gap or space between the top five teams than the other five. So that's probably the tough time in Formula One. But then, yeah, you quickly realize that. But you have to be consistent. You have to be on there, on your form every single individual year. So I think consistency is where I still missed a bit last season.
Well, can I talk to you about two races in particular last year? Then we'll bring it on to this year. But let's start with Hungary. Both you and Valtteri are on fire. You qualify P5. I think he's P7. Where did that performance come from? Because it felt like a bolt out of the blue at the time. Just what lit up the car that weekend?
Honestly, it's a very good question. But if I'm honest, even for us as a team, going from the race before into that race, we didn't change something massively. We have this own baseline setup. But when the car was on ground, it was turning. You know, it was sitting on the ground very nicely, feeling the downforce, the load you needed. And I feel like that week we were being top 10 every single practice session, and then qualify, we just maximize everything. It just shows you how, in a way, important Formula One is for the car. You know, if you have the car, drivers all can develop into results, you know. And then, yeah, that was a perfect Saturday to show people that, you know, if everything is there, I can be, you know, as fast as all these, you know, Grand Prix winner drivers. Like Valtteri is such a great one lap, especially pace driver. So for me to be out qualify him starting P5, I think it was also probably the best of the Ferrari engines, and I was just surprised, and also in a way give me a big confidence going into the coming season. So
the biggest irony of it all is that it meant that you were right in the melee at the start. The one race where you could have done being further back was probably that one.
Yeah, I mean, it was a tough, that Hungarian, it was a very mixed feeling, because I had a perfect Saturday, and Sunday, like, it was like the worst day of my life, because that feeling was worse than maybe P10, you know, and then you have a reliability issue, because I was out of the control already before the lights go off. My engine kicks in this auto safe mode, which switch off all my revs before the start, and I had nothing to do. I have to standing still, you know, do a whole procedure, which was too late for the original start. And then, yeah, I was last before even the lights crossed the green light. So yeah, things like that. I think I had a lot of moments in Formula One, a lot of frustrations, but I'm just grateful to be still here, still can have time to pull myself, and still can, you know, continue to be work hard and develop some results.
Do you think this year's car will be as quick in Hungary? Has it got the same characteristics?
This year's car is completely different. We need to see which race we're going to be, you know, very strong at. Because what was good is that we have quite a lot of strong new upgrades coming up. But in terms of, is it going to be as good in Hungary? It's a question mark for now. Because even though at the time we didn't expect last year's car to be that good, as it showed at the Hungarian race, so even in quali. So I'm just hope that we can continue to make these steps, because you see a lot of other teams we're fighting for, they are closing quite a lot the gap, so we need to take action. But obviously this year the priority is the pit stop, so we need to solve that, and we can race.
Look, we'll come on to that, but if Hungary last year was a brilliant Saturday and a really frustrating Sunday, can we now talk about Qatar?
Yeah.
Which is kind of the opposite, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's roller coaster.
last to P9, would you say that's the best drive you've put in so far in your career?
Yeah, this one was definitely up there. I think in terms of the best drive, it's either that one, or I did felt the one I did in Bahrain this year also up there. Of course, the result didn't came just because the top five team, nobody, there was no retirement. But yeah, these two is definitely up there. Qatar is probably on top of the list just because the certain stance we had in the weather, the temperature we have to face for the race. For me, obviously, the results feel like all this hard work, this pain I went through in the race, it got rewarded. So I was quite happy, of course. And it was something not expected, because I think at some stage I was defending a Red Bull, and that's where it makes the difference with Sergio, because I think, and then he had this penalty track limit, and I was able to jump him on track with the penalty. So yeah, things like that, it just helping. And I feel like it's a normal certain standard, I will never defend for a Red Bull. But then at this stage, at some point, I feel like I had a similar pace, and of course, I'm going to try my best to maintain the position.
Now, that race proved just how spot on your race pace is. I did want to ask you a little bit more about quali, because something technical director James Key said earlier in the year was, Joe's race pace, absolutely happy with that. We'd like to see a little bit more consistency on a Saturday. How do you set about doing that?
I think it's also something for me as a key to be improved for this season, because I think obviously my benchmark, Valtteri, everyone knows how good he is with one lap pace especially. And for me, at the first year was not easy to catch him. And then last year, this year, I had quite a lot of occasions to be better. But for me, I do felt a lot of times I could be quicker than him. But then with that little mistake there, or over pushing, it makes me, you know, makes it a little bit worse on the statics. So yeah, definitely something I want to improve that. And I feel like in qualifiers at some stage, I always try to give it everything, every single corner. But at some stage, you have to sacrifice a little bit to be making a clean exit, to not having the mistake. And that's something I want to clean off a little bit.
Joe, it seems to be happening up and down the grid. Just look at Lando Norris, brilliantly fast racing driver. But we did last year see him make a few mistakes in qualifying. Several occasions, I remember him coming into a post-qualifying press conference and saying, I should have been on pole. But it was, I remember track limits in Qatar, funnily enough, was one of the examples he gave. So does it come down to experience about knowing where to hold back?
Yeah. The hard part about like where we are as a team is that in Q1, we need to give it everything already. So that's where the mistake could be happen. But like Valtteri, for sure, he's, you know, having less than what I do. And then, of course, when we reach Q2, then it's a little bit easy because you already have this pre-attempt on your flying lap. And also, you know that Q2, you're either going to give it a maximum out or this is going to be the position we're going to be standing for. So, and then Q1 with the field now within a second cover, you know, all the people. So I think that's where mistake can be happen. And that's where, like, where we are standing for that we need to give it everything. But I think it's a finding a great balance between how much you can push in certain corners than your previous lap. You know, these things I think can still for me to improve, and I think I will make a step, and hopefully I can have a clean weekend this time out. And
I remember you saying when you first came on Beyond the Grid that Valtteri was a different teammate, because actually you did not only share data, but he actually tried to help you a bit. As you've got closer to him and started to beat him, is he still as generous as he was 2 years ago?
Of course, it's always quite a competition in the team. You know, you want to be the best. That's clear for, you know, your own personal future career. And I think it's the same for everyone. But what I do say for him is that he is still there, you know, to share information, to be able to make a step together with me together, try to improve it as a team, improve our package all the way around. And definitely, let's say the first year compared to now is a bit more intense, so we need to, you know, always fighting a bit more on track. But so we always, you know, do the right thing, and whoever can perform can come out top. So there's no, let's say, too clever or eager feeling between any of us, even in the race graph. You know, if one guy's ahead, the other guy, we are trying to use him to protect a little bit or help his race if, you know, we're only fighting for the final spot. So, yeah.
So a bit like we saw the Haas guys doing in Saudi Arabia, you would work for each other in the same way.
Yeah. I don't think any of us can be extremist Magnus.
12 seconds in 18 laps, or so I think he gained.
Yeah, but also I think, I don't know, he had 20 seconds penalty.
And 20, true.
Obviously, true. Yeah, I think things like that, definitely people are looking into that a little bit. But we definitely are working still as a team. And of course, I think this year for all the drivers on the grid, with the contract expire and everybody want to show their own potential, everybody want to be the best of themselves. And for whatever reason for their career. So I think, we do want to be each other. We want to be best in our team, but, we're still a team player in the same way.
As we speak now, 13 drivers are going to be out of contract at the end of the year. Do you enjoy the driver musical chairs, or would you just like to get it sorted and know what you're doing?
Yeah, I definitely prefer to be getting it sorted and knowing, you know, what I'm doing for the next few years, so I can be, you know, fully committed to the program, to the project going ahead with, you know, with any team. So for me, I think, of course, I know it's a rookie coming into Formula One. It's not like maybe 10 years ago, a new driver coming to Formula One, they always have like a long or 2-3 years contract. Now it's like the team want to see a individual contract, want to see you perform. And then, I feel like having individual yearly contract is tough for mental side, because you want to limit it, your mistake. In the same time, you want to be sure your passion of progression as a driver to the team. So that's where the hard thing comes, because in summertime, September, you're still not sure exactly your contract, when they can give you the green, when you're going to sign. That's where, you know, things come very tricky for the drivers in the cockpit.
I feel like I'm talking to Valtteri Bottas, because I remember him saying when he was at Mercedes, when it was just a drip-fed one-year extension, and then suddenly he went to Alfa Romeo and got a long-term deal. I remember him saying what a difference it made to his approach, knowing what he was doing, not just for next year, but the year after. Ditto Carlos Sainz, actually, at Ferrari.
Yeah, exactly. I think, obviously, with Carlos, it's a little bit different situation. Like, he will have a seat, but, like, he's trying to find the best situation. Of course, it's not nice when, you know, you start the season already knowing that you're not going to drive for Ferrari next year. But I think he can use this year to prove himself, which he already did in Australia. So, yeah, for me, of course, I have this feeling of Valtteri felt in his entire public career until he left Mercedes. But yeah, in a way that at some stage it's difficult to find this balance between them, because you don't really know where exactly you will end up. That's all, yeah, something you try to not think about over the season, but at some stage you are also aware of the situation, knowing exactly you need to perform, you need to show what they can do, and yeah, finding, let's say, the right approach into every weekend. That's probably the biggest challenge for the driver, especially I think this year with the so many drivers out of contract, it's going to be all rumors going on.
And with so many seats available, are you looking everywhere, or is your priority to stay where you are?
I mean, priority, of course, is I would love to be, you know, staying here and to the Audi. But I think what I do say is already before, I'm looking definitely for, let's say, hopefully a longer contract. And I'm quite open to, of course, all the team. But at the moment, I'm very committed to the season that we are facing together with Stake F1 team. Try to finish the season in a high, try to pull myself, try to show the people, all the engineers, that I'm continuing to grow, continuing to making further steps as a driver. And then we see the rest. But yeah, for me, definitely I would think what's the best for myself together and for my future. Of course, the main object is to continue staying for Formula One in this paddock. And then, yeah, if you have several different options, then you can have a bit more deeper look into that.
Let's talk about the C44. Do you have the car to show the world what you can do?
I think we can, but of course, what I'm talking about, we can. We're not talking about fighting for podium, you know, fighting for top five. We're talking about fighting for these final spots in the points, in the final top tens. I think, you know, if I can perform every single weekend like I did in Bahrain, I think that will, you know, give me a very high chance of having something, a good or longer contract together with either with my team or even with other options. So this time, I just want to clean up a little bit and try to be there, be consistent, give the trust of myself that, you know, I can be as good as all of them and show the other people what I can do.
And what about these pit stop problems?
Ah. Yeah, it's a tough frustration, let's say, issues we're having, we're suffering. As a driver, it's probably not the most coolest thing to have when you knowing that even though now we're in race four, we haven't 100% solved the issue. We are making our way through the problem. We're changing, adjusting, try to play with several different things, upgrading our materials, also the wheel nut gun, all this stuff to be, you know, back in form, at least to be consistently not having this, you know, 30 seconds, 50 seconds stops. But it's tough because if I look back to the races we've been through, Bahrain was P11, so Jeddah, I would be 11. Because of thanks for Kevin, so I will become a right behind or 5 seconds behind Hülkenberg. It's not a bad result in terms of how our racecraft or the car is, but yeah, when you come to a stop, you're just constantly worried about the front wheel nuts. So that's something it's tough to go through, but the whole issue will be solved later on the other races. Unfortunately, it's the fact.
Well, we look forward to that. We're looking forward to racing in China again. Can you just imagine for a second if you got your first points of the season at home?
I would love to be scoring points in Shanghai. So
it would be huge,
yeah,
wouldn't it?
Having a great result there is going to be a huge moment for me, also for my entire career. And yeah, to be racing home for the first time in my, you know, F1 season, and also my first time racing at the track. And it's going to be very a memorable, let's say, weekend afterwards. But yeah, let's focus on the to prepare the best possible, give fans a great show.
New for this year, Joe, we have some quick fire questions to end.
Yep. Okay.
All right. Are you ready?
Yep.
First one, what else are you good at?
Football, badminton.
Can you name one of them? Football or badminton?
I would say badminton because my football rank is alright for Chinese player. Well, maybe Europeans are a little bit lower. I'm quite good.
Now, which racing driver, dead or alive, would you like to be stuck in a lift with?
Maybe Sebastian Vettel. I think he's a very intelligent guy.
He'll get you out.
He knows technical stuff about everything in the world. So.
Who would play you in a film?
Well, I'd go for Alonso. You mean drivers? Or?
No, just anyone.
Everyone.
Yeah, no, but Alonso, I'm interested. Yeah.
No, if everyone, Alonso is not my first pick. So.
Okay.
Sorry, but I will go for the Ray Johnson, the Rock. Cool. Not the size. Size is different, but I just love him as an actor.
He wouldn't get in the character. Car, would he?
No.
Who is the coolest person in your contacts?
For me, it's Jay Chou or JJ. So the two Chinese celebrities, and they are like one of the biggest two famous singer of all time. So,
are they going to be coming to China?
Jay Chou was in the Australia Grand Prix, and JJ is going to be coming to the race in Shanghai.
Look, final one. Who would be your first guest if you hosted a podcast?
I would go for Daniel Rick, because I do think he's a very funny guy, and the broadcaster you want to be, people can say stuff they wanted, having cool stories. I think Daniel has a lot. So,
do you hang out with him quite a lot? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I do hang out with him quite a bit, but of course, I mean, I'm not living in Monaco, but when I had the chance, I always try to, you know, speak to him.
He's good fun, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Joe, thank you very much. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
I'd love to listen to Joe and Daniel Ricciardo on a podcast. Chaos probably, but great fun. I'd also like to see The Rock trying to wrestle himself into an F1 cockpit were he to play Joe in a film. And talking of films, best of luck with the new documentary, Joe. I took a lot from that conversation. I thought Joe's resilience shone through, as well as his understanding of F1. He knows the sport and what it takes to succeed in it. And I just hope he gets the opportunity to race again in 2025, because there's no doubt that he's improving with every season. Thanks for your time, Joe, and I look forward to seeing you in Shanghai. Let me know what you thought of that conversation with Joe through all the usual means, as you did after last week's episode with Juan Pablo Montoya. What a character JPM is, and I thought Tommy Hughes summed it up well when he got in touch to say this. Unfiltered JPM, I love it. I started watching Formula One in 2000, and I can remember his entrance into F1 and the monster that was Williams BMW in 2003. Great listen. Thanks for getting in touch, Tommy, and I'm glad you enjoyed the show. And thanks to everyone else who wrote in as well. Well, that's almost it for this week. Remember that while Joe's looking forward to his home race, you can still book your seat at yours. Tickets for Las Vegas, Miami, Austin, Montreal, Imola, Zandvoort, and the rest of the 2024 season are available now. Go to tickets.formula1.com. And while you're booking your tickets, why not check out the other official F1 podcasts, F1 Nation and F1 Explains. And don't forget that you can also watch episodes of F1 Beyond the Grid on the F1 YouTube channel. You can see Joe's non-mullet, plus exclusive glimpses into Alex Albon and Oscar Piastri's driver rooms. I'll of course be back next week with another great guest from the world of Formula One. But for now, thanks for listening. F1 Beyond the Grid is produced by Formula One and Audio Boom Studios. Until next time, keep it flat out.